Now the end of voting in the general election next Tuesday is getting closer. A lot of people have voted in person around the country, and things are mostly going smoothly with some lines along the way. But there have been worries about tension at polling places during a hotly contested election and with disagreements sometimes about social distancing and mask wearing. Our next guest works to help de-escalate conflicts among people with an organization that trains people in how to deal with tense situations. They've released guidelines to help voters and poll workers be prepared if voices start to get raised. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you haven't voted yet, do you have a plan to? What is it? Do you have concerns about going to your polling place? Have you voted early in person already? What was that experience like? More generally, do you have questions about any situation where tensions are high and how to de-escalate them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Driscoll is president of Milwaukee's Crisis Prevention Institute. She has recommendations for preparing to vote in person and ways we can plan to de-escalate any difficult situations that might come up. Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be here, Rob.
Well, I want to start, Susan, with maybe a disclaimer. A lot of voting is pretty smoothly. I think for in-person voting around the country, a lot of people go in, vote, and leave, maybe after a wait. And that's probably the situation most people will find in Wisconsin. So is there something about making sure we don't create an expectation of conflict where it won't always happen?
Oh, I think that's very, very important as a starting point, that it may be that everything goes smoothly. If, in fact, though, it doesn't, the voters should be prepared, and that's what we're all about. That's what our advice is about.
Definitely. And let's get to that. First, the concept of de-escalating conflicts. Before we get into the specific steps, can you talk about the value of preparing and thinking through how we might react in a situation where, I don't know, an argument starts or something like that?
Yes. So Crisis Prevention Institute, I should just start by saying we've been doing this training for 40 years. We started with mental health facilities and workers in those facilities. We now train people in education, especially special education and in human services. But we teach how to recognize the stages of a crisis and specifically what to do at every stage. And we teach that while you can't control somebody's behavior, you can absolutely control your own behavior. And that's the best way to get a good outcome, is to actually control your behavior in a situation.
You've got four steps on how to do that. But before we get into those, let's talk about that initial point of recognition that, hey, maybe I need to think about my personal control and my de-escalation tools right now. What kind of warning signs, whether you're working as a nurse or teacher or you're in a public place or a polling place, what are the first things that might make us think, okay, let's go to those steps now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the act of thinking about it actually is the first step, because you're controlling your thinking brain and you're not allowing your emotional brain to take over. And because we're all anxious, we're all emotionally, in emotionally charged situations, it's natural and actually instinctual that your emotions would take charge. Just by recognizing the stage of a crisis, then you're actually engaging your thinking brain, and just that act will help you be more in control. But the first stage is anxiety, and you can see when somebody is anxious. Now, I would say that everybody in the world is probably at a heightened state of anxiety.
Sure.
Because of everything that's going on. But when somebody is anxious, the first response is just to be empathetic and supportive. But that's a warning sign that something more, the situation could escalate. And probably half the people you encounter in a day are already at a state of, experiencing some sort of anxiety.
Talking to Susan Driscoll, president of Milwaukee's Crisis Prevention Institute, about how to de-escalate potential conflict situations in our daily lives, in the workplace. And they're encouraging people to think about this in case of arguments, say, at polling places next Tuesday. All right, Susan, let's get into our steps now. As you said, we can't control the behavior of other people, but we can control ourselves, and that makes a big difference. Step one in your four-step list is avoid judgment. Talk about that, please.
Yes. So behavior is a form of communication. So somebody who's acting out or has a strong opinion is just trying to communicate something. Usually it's distress or an attempt to control or protect whatever they have left. So avoid judging them, avoid getting into whether you disagree or agree, you know, with their perspective, and just look at them as simply a person in distress and respond as if you would, you know, anybody you knew and cared about, you know, who's in distress, you'd react with empathy and support. So I think that's the first step.
And then step two is don't take it personally, which, you know, may be easier said than done.
Absolutely easier said than done. Understand, though, that somebody is expressing the distress that came from another situation, that came from another part of their life or an event that happened before you encountered them. So it's absolutely not about you. You just happen to be the person that, you know, is there when they're showing up with this distressed behavior. You have to rationally detach. Again, it's engaging that thinking brain, but separating yourself from the immediacy of the situation and almost considering yourself an independent third-party observer to the situation.
That's interesting. And I don't know how well I could do that. Can you give some advice on how to step out of ourselves for that moment and not react personally?
Well, I think, just thinking about, I wonder why they think that. I wonder why they're reacting that way. I wonder what's going on, you know, what other things might be going on in their life. You're thinking about this in the moment, so you're not going to do, you know, a detailed analysis, but just that understanding that they're a person who's in distress. And I think it's important to understand that their behaviors, their actions is a way of protecting what little they have left to protect. And, you know, think of it that way. It just sort of puts a different lens on what's showing up in front of you.
We're talking to Susan Driscoll with the Crisis Prevention Institute about planning to de-escalate conflicts that can occur in our daily lives and our workplaces. And they're encouraging people to think about this as they work at polls or go to vote on the off chance that there might be some tension. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you used these kind of de-escalation techniques maybe in your daily life, or have you been trained in it in your job? As we've heard, people in healthcare, mental health, education, and other places get these kinds of training. Have you gotten it? Have you been able to use it? Do you have advice on how to dial down a situation of conflict in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Susan Driscoll from the Crisis Prevention Institute in Milwaukee. We're talking about ways to de-escalate tense situations in our lives or workplaces, and they're encouraging people to think about it in case of tension at polling stations on Tuesday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you dealt with de-escalating conflicts in your own life, in your own work? Do you work at polling stations? Do things usually go really well and civilly or friendly? What happens when voices get raised, if they do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up our guest's recommendations. Step one, recognizing the problem, but then avoiding judgment, not taking it personally. We'll pick up another couple steps in a minute. But first, let's bring on a caller. Kathy is with us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Kathy?
I just wanted to share that oftentimes there are conflicts between parents and teachers. And you just have to remember that the parents might be feeling some frustration at possibly not being able to help their child or not knowing what the problem is with the learning situation. So you just have to take a deep breath and say, and step back and say, we both want what's best for this child. So if you remember that you're both coming from that aspect, it's easier to put yourself in the shoes of the parent and to help them understand that, you know, you do both want what's best for them, and hopefully they will take your advice since you're the professional.
Kathy, thank you so much for sharing that experience with us. What do you think, Susan?
I absolutely agree with that. I think that, it's walking in their shoes. It's acknowledging and having empathy for their position. People just want to feel acknowledged, and they want to feel that you're in it with them. So I think Kathy's advice is right on.
Thanks so much for that call, Kathy, at 800-642-1234. And Kathy, Susan gives us a great setup. She clearly is working to control her reaction in that situation of conflict, and control your reaction is step three in the process you're educating people in. Can you talk about what that means and how to do it?
Yes. Yes. That is the rational detachment is the term we use, but be calm, be consistent. Don't get engaged in what we call a power struggle or, a debate. You're wrong, I'm right. You're wrong, I'm right. That does not go into a good place. But if you're calm and consistent, you're empathetic, you acknowledge that there are people with real feelings, that's how you, avoid these escalations from happening.
Now, I know sometimes in a difficult situation, we get those physical signs, physical reactions to conflict. A heart rate goes up, or we get sweaty, or, that kind of thing. How can we make sure we recognize that, set it aside, and not let that control our reaction?
Well, I think actually, Rob, that's a really good point, because now with mask mandates, you can't actually see the anxiety that might be on somebody's face. So, look for pacing, look for balled up fists, look for hunched shoulders or frowns. Those are all signs of defensive behavior. You can feel your own heart, racing. Take a deep breath. Again, just taking a few moments, you're disengaging that emotional brain and, helping your rational brain give it a moment to take charge, because it takes longer to engage the thinking brain than it does the emotional brain.
Now let's go to the fourth step. Now we've hopefully controlled our reaction, and previously we'd avoided judgment, and we're not taking this conflict situation personally. The last step is be prepared if you have to engage. What do you mean by that?
Usually if somebody is at what we call the defensive stage, the second stage of a crisis, they will ask a challenging question. They will refuse to do something. They may try to intimidate you. Be prepared for that. And the best way to handle that is, what we call interrupt and redirect. So you acknowledge their feeling and then you, stick to your point. So for example, if they're saying, I think this election is all a hoax and a setup, you don't say, no, it's not, or I completely disagree with you. You're more likely to have a successful outcome if you say, I completely understand your perspective. People have different opinions. Wow, is this line long? I can't wait for this election to be over. Don't engage in the debate. Acknowledge their feelings and, try to change the subject to something more neutral.
I think some people would be really good at it. I think there's a lot of us out there who, when confronted with a point that we disagree with, will want to jump in and win the argument. How do we recognize that part of our personality and realize, hey, this isn't my best tool in this situation?
Well, I think that, I think it's being prepared. Again, the reason we put out these tips is that so people can be thoughtful going in and getting themselves under control and, and not wanting to get engaged in the fight and have something terrible happen. There will be people who come into the polling place that, there could be people who do want to pick a fight, but don't allow them to do that. You can control your behavior and prevent it from happening.
Talking to Susan Driscoll, president of the Crisis Prevention Institute in Milwaukee. They do trainings in conflict de-escalation. They're offering advice now in part because of at least the potential for tense moments as people go to vote in person on Tuesday. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. If you have a question about how to deal with a situation of conflict, or maybe ways you've used de-escalation in your own life, in your own workplace, maybe at a polling place in the past, I don't know. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Susan, can you talk about what goes into training? I mean, obviously, these four points, it sounds pretty simple, but I imagine with people who deal with conflict situations more often, there's more that goes into it. What kind of training goes into that?
Sure. So we actually have a train-the-trainer model. We train instructors who go back to their organizations and train their workers. But it is understanding the steps and the skills involved in verbal de-escalation. We do offer programs, you know, if somebody is in a very high-risk mental health department or dealing with severely autistic children, we teach restrictive interventions, which is how to disengage and how to keep the child and the workers safe in the process.
Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, so I used to teach Taekwondo for J.K. Lee here in Milwaukee, and we used to teach the students the fight you win is the fight you're never in. That being said, though, I almost feel like with a lot of this, we should actually engage the conversation and try and take and control our own reactions and listen to what the other person is saying, because if our point of view is so correct, we shouldn't need to raise our voice or call people out of their names, and we should become more in accord with our own. And if we can't do that, then we need to reexamine our position because something's wrong with our logic.
Marcus, thanks for the call. And I could see where Marcus is coming from, Susan, that, yeah, it is good to engage with people with different ideas. But maybe at that tense moment with somebody who's angry at a polling place or wherever it might be, might not be the ideal time to have that that meeting of the minds. What do you think, Susan?
I think that's right. I should say, actually, that to Marcus, that our founder 40 years ago was a judo champion. And
oh, no kidding.
So, with a communications background, was asked to go into a mental hospital to teach the staff members judo techniques for self-defense, and ended up realizing that they didn't need judo. They needed verbal de-escalation because they were creating, you know, the situations that led to the violence. So there's a lot of what we do that's grounded in those very principles. What I would say is, it's absolutely appropriate to have a rational discussion with somebody who's rational, but you don't know that person and you don't know whether they're actually in a rational state. So you can't anticipate or expect that you can engage in that rational debate. I think also their truth is very real to them. You know, my truth is very real to me. It could be that one or the other is right. You know, they could be absolutely right. You know, it's not for us to judge. It goes back to the first point. Don't judge. Just acknowledge that they have a point of view, that they are a person who's struggling as we all are, and, you know, respond with empathy.
Thanks again for calling in, Marcus. We'll go to Dennis now in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. What I figure, especially if we know somebody, is to determine, do we want to win the argument or keep the relationship? Otherwise, if you try to win, you're going to end up losing a relationship or lose the possibility of a relationship.
That's interesting, Dennis. Thanks for the call. Some of these rules could apply within, I guess, all manner of relationships, a marriage or co-workers or parents and teachers, as our other caller said, Susan. What do you think about Dennis's notion there?
I think, Dennis, that is an excellent point. Really, what do you want to gain out of this? And, you know, if you want to release tension, there are other ways to release your own tension and deal with your own anxiety. But if you want to protect a relationship, it's very important to stay in control and, you know, be calm, consistent, and empathetic.
Thanks a lot, Dennis, for sharing that with us. Tyler joins us now in Elkhorn. Tyler, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Tyler?
Yeah, so having some law enforcement background in the military, we've been taught to for de-escalation an acronym that we refer to as LEAPS, and we use it's listen, empathize, ask questions, paraphrase, and summarize. So basically, you know, you're allowing them to kind of vent, you're listening to them, giving them the opportunity to speak, you're empathizing with them, you know, because like you've mentioned before, you want to kind of put yourself in their shoes, and then, you know, kind of ask questions, you know, engage, like maybe what's the root cause of the issue, paraphrase, you know, in your opinion, you know, what you feel, and then, you know, summarize, you know, so they feel like they have a voice, and then maybe come and try to work to the solve the problem.
Wow. Tyler, thank you so much for sharing that training with us. Susan, sounds comparable to a lot of what you've been talking about.
Absolutely, Tyler. That's an excellent point. And I think what's especially important about what you said is the listening with empathy. If you just allow a person to express their opinion, you're giving them control. If you acknowledge it, you're giving them more control. And, you know, I think in these crazy times, we all want a little control. And by giving somebody that control and recognition and support, you're going to de-escalate them pretty quickly.
Thanks a lot for that call. Susan, in our last minute, so I came into this thinking we're talking about a situation of two people in a room together. This mindset seems like it could help on a much larger scale society-wide, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're making these tips available. We've dealt with a very small segment of the population, but we really do believe that these tips can help everybody. And it's this, you know, time in our world, I think they couldn't be more important.
Where can people go to find that, your kind of checklist, your four-step method here?
Yep. crisisprevention.com/election or just www.crisisprevention.com.
Susan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Susan Driscoll is president of the Crisis Prevention Institute in Milwaukee. We talked with her today about how to plan to de-escalate tense situations anywhere in our daily lives, in our workplace, and ones we might encounter maybe as voting winds to a close next Tuesday.